This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave time, Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Big thank you to T there for the 6 at 6, but at 6.30. And Richard, not with us this week. We'll catch him next week with the news. On the Worldwide Wave panel tonight, Ian's here.
Hi there.
Hello, Alex.
Namaste.
And welcome, Say E, to your first show with us.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
And my name is Matt.
Now, this coming week marks the one-year anniversary since India decriminalised homosexuality, and that was for the second time. Rather than a law passing through Parliament, it took the Supreme Court ruling to make it happen. And jumping forward to today, the Indian Parliament is now discussing a new bill for the LGBTI community. The bill is called the Transgender Persons Protection of Rights Bill, but the title of the bill hides some major concerns for the LGBTI community.
And there is no person better qualified to speak about this topic than tonight's guest, Apsara Reddy, the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party. We find out in full and frank terms what she thinks of the bill, how much life has changed for the rainbow community since the decriminalization. Plus, we discover Apsara's surprisingly close link to Melbourne's LGBTI community. This Friday, September 6th, marks the one-year anniversary since India's Supreme Court abolished the colonial-era Section 377 that criminalised homosexuality. In celebrating this milestone, we speak with the driver of change for India's LGBTI community. Apsara Reddy is the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party, having been drafted into the women's wing of the party. We asked Apsara when she first realised she might be transgender.
I always knew I was meant to be a girl. I felt very wrong in the male body from a very young age, at about 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. I used to wear my mom's heels. I used to like wearing, a towel around my hair to make it look longer. So I always was extremely feminine, and I felt very wrong in the male body. And as I grew older, in my adolescence, I felt extremely suicidal, and I felt completely wronged in so many ways. I felt God made, women, and to punish them, he just made boys and just pulled it out. So for the longest time, I kept trying to push it back in. And then I realized that, I think I need to be open about it and be honest about it to my parents. I did come out to my mom when I was 15, 16. It was very tough. It was extremely tough for somebody from the Indian subcontinent to understand that I'm transgender. And a lot of people tell you you're gay. A lot of people have a lot of things to say to you. Cruel, harsh, baseless things are said, and I think a lot of people tried to influence my family. But I was very firm, and I said I was not violating anybody's space. I wasn't violating anything in the law. I was just trying to be who I truly was within.
Yeah.
So I just convinced my mom, and I said, I'm going to be the same, articulate, sensible, intelligent, protective child of yours, and I think you must give me a chance to blossom and find my own space. And I think PFLAG as an organization at that point in time was extremely helpful, because I put my mom in touch with them. There was a lot of literature that she read. There's a lot of counseling via the email and phone that she went through. Dad wasn't so receptive. There was a lot of issues on the family front, but then I kind of, focused my studies and mainstreaming and doing my hormones, and things eventually worked out.
That's wonderful. And when did you decide that, hormone therapy and surgery was the way to go for you?
I was in Australia, strangely, that we're speaking right now, in Australia, studying at Monash. I'd finished my 11th, 12th grade when I was about 15 and a half, 16, so I had to get parental permission to even use the computer labs at my university in Melbourne, at Monash University. That's how young I was when I came to Melbourne. And I went to this club. I very, very vividly remember I met this transsexual at Market called Jacinta. And she actually helped me, you know, understanding hormones and stuff. So I started hormone therapy in Australia, in Melbourne.
Huh.
In fact, I used to volunteer with Joy Melbourne. I did a program called Orange Ribbon with Joy Melbourne. I used to host a program with Shantan Chang then. So I have very nice memories of, you know, how I started my hormone therapy and how Australia and Melbourne as a community, you know, the LGBT community stood by me. I used to perform in many clubs as a drag queen then. And in fact, none of those videos and those memories have been erased from social media because I kind of took on a different name and a political standing in India. But then my life as a trans woman began in Australia, in Melbourne.
It was actually wonderful when you told me you volunteered at Joy, because I love how this has given me an opportunity to grow while studying, and it's wonderful to like connect to people like from, we are like miles apart, yet
different
there is
parts
something.
Of the world. Yeah. You know what Joy? What Joy brings to your life in perspective? what Joy did for me when I was a student there was it exposed me to the intricacies of being LGBT, not just sexual exploration, but also to understand nuances of being LGBT, the fight for rights, the fight for dignity, the fight for liberation. And I think it also made me a more wholesome person in understanding the LGBT issues. So Joy, I think Joy shaped me in so many ways, and I have to thank Joy as I'm on air, because it brings back such beautiful memories of shaping my career, shaping me as a person.
Yeah, and it was wonderful to know that you're from Chennai as well.
Are you from Chennai?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wonderful. So, Tamil la pesuvingla?
Kan na Tamil la yara orthu kadaikka maatangla appdindru.
It's wonderful to speak in Tamil.
Yes,
while you're
course.
Sitting in Australia hosting a show, Joy Melbourne.
Definitely.
But, yeah, so it's been a great journey.
That's Apsara Reddy, former Joy presenter and now the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party, sharing her very personal story and her connection to Joy. Now, what were you saying in Tamil? Any secrets there?
Well, see, after coming here, my classmates are all Australian and most of my Indian friends don't speak my language. So
any chance you can?
Yes, any chance I find a Tamil person, I go all out, because I'm at a stage where I feel like I'm forgetting my fluency. So she was asking me if I speak in Tamil, and I was like, I'm waiting for the time when I can actually find someone who speaks in Tamil.
We would love to be able to help you with that one, but we can't. Love the Joy connection, though, and it just kind of brings home how lucky we are, one of three LGBT radio stations in the world, how lucky we are to have Joy here in Melbourne, and what it means to really, you know, how Apsara has said that's really been a formative part of herself, her journey.
Absolutely, and part of her politics, her political career. I looked it up. I mean, that show started in July 1998, and it ran for about 550 shows. I think we've gone a little bit beyond that with World Wide Wave, but you know, there's a whole history of 26 years with Joy, and I'd be really fascinated to hear from people who used to listen to Orange Ribbon. Did you used to listen to Orange Ribbon, which was the multicultural show on Joy?
I did. I remember it. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's great, uh-huh. Good show. But yes, look, send us your messages if you got your or if Joy's had an impact on your life. Let us know. 0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au.
Just fine. काटे अगर बॉस काटे जब गर्लफ्रेंड फालतू झाड़े और महंगाई अपने फाड़े होने ताबी चोर सारे या पुलिस भी बटवा मारे
पेट्रोल मोर महंगा दिन कारे
बीबी मांगे आसमां से तारे
was Hum Hain Happy by the Six Pack Band.
Which is a full transgender band. Six transgender artists singing away. Loving that groove.
Yes, yeah.
Let us know what you think about it. Messages, I had one in on Facebook. This story throughout the week of our Prime Minister who has vowed to sort out a gender-inclusive toilet sign, which is, you know, I would have thought, you know, obviously his top priority in terms of looking after our country is removing a sign from within his department. If you missed the story, it's a gender-inclusive sign. He said he will sort it out. Bindi says, what doesn't he understand about it? Can somebody with reading comprehension skills explain it to him? Good on you, Bindi. I like it.
Yeah, well, that's just a start for our dear Prime Minister. Our guest tonight is a former Joy presenter who now spends her time working with the All India Mahila Congress. That's the women's wing of the Indian National Congress, which is one of the largest political parties in the country. We asked Apsara how she found her way into politics and her opinion on the new Transgender Protection Bill.
I was a trained journalist. I worked with organizations like the BBC. I worked with organizations in Australia, in India, national dailies, English dailies. I never really planned politics. For me, journalism happened, and from journalism, I was invited by a really big network in India to do a television chat show with celebrities. And I think I did that. And then I was spotted by various powerful politicians and offered roles in political parties, which I, you know, became the official national official spokesperson for English media for a channel, which was, for a political party in Tamil Nadu, in the south of India. And further to that, I was elevated, you know, into the Indian National Congress, which is one of the largest and oldest political party in India, and I represent the women's division. So I'm really, really happy that mainstreaming has happened for me. I'm considered a woman now. I represent gender justice issues, you know, across platforms. I even address the European Parliament as a spokesperson. So I think it's been a great journey, and I think being in politics is a great platform, not just to just have a voice, but also visibility of a trans woman in politics changes so much perspective.
What was interesting to note is that your first party was the BJP, and given some of their very conservative outlooks, how was this your first step into politics?
See, as I told you, I never planned my entry into politics. Yeah. I was invited for a Women's Day function on March 8th, International Women's Day, to receive an award at the local BJP office in my state. And then when I went there, they said, hey, listen, why don't you head the women's wing in the state? And I said, I'll think about it. Even before I did any paperwork, before I got the identity card, before I got any membership number, the media splashed the news that I was part of the BJP. I was never really part of the BJP. I just had lunch with the leaders and received an award.
Okay.
So what's been reported in the media is completely false, because I was never a member of the BJP. Of course, I met the leaders. I had lunch with them. I had, you know, the most powerful leaders of the party took me out for lunch and gave me an award. But it was just an award.
Yeah. While on the topic of the BJP, would you like to move on to the our next hot topic in India, the Transgender Persons Protection Bill?
I have huge issues with that. I really think it's obviously not, the amended bill is not yet passed. I mean, we've asked for amendment, and the final bill is not yet out and not been presented, but the initial bill that the BJP authored was grossly in violation of human rights and dignity. They basically criminalized so many things that a transgender woman does. For example, living arrangements. And transgender women are not, you know, there are no reservations in jobs or medical subsidies or housing. And when transgender women are thrown out of home in India, they have no place to go, but other transgender women take them in and groom them. So that was being criminalized. There was also, begging was being criminalized. And, you know, They beg out of joblessness. They beg because of unemployment, because of hunger. True. Not because anybody likes to get on the streets and beg for money. But transgender women are pushed to a corner without opportunity. So I feel without the government talking about opportunity or reservations in, you know, in housing, in education, in medical facilities, how can then how then can transgender women, you know, have a dignified life? They're thrown out of home. They're left to fend for themselves on the street. There's huge sexual violence. So I really feel a transgender bill should talk about protecting transgender women and opportunities before criminalizing their lifestyle. And also, the Supreme Court of India has said that self-identification is very, very important to human dignity. So if I identify as a trans woman, I deserve to be known as a trans woman, and I need to have my identity cards made that way. But unfortunately, the BJP says you have to go in front of the government, says the national government says, but you have to go in front of a screening committee which determines whether you're good enough to be a woman or a man or a transgender. And I feel that is really in violation of the judgment of the Supreme Court, which says self-identification should be supreme.
Is there any chance there's going to be self-affirmation in the Indian law? Is that an amendment that's at all possible, or is that for a future date?
The Supreme Court has already said that self-identification should be the priority, and that's the way forward. But the government in Parliament is still deliberating a very archaic transgender bill, which basically wants a transgender individual to face a district screening committee. So in every district of your state, you have to go to a screening committee where there's a panel of people who examine you. And I feel that's grossly in violation of human dignity, because I think I'm allowed to choose who I am and who I want to be. And I think that shouldn't be left for a future date. But unfortunately, the way the Indian government is dragging its feet on it, one can only wait and watch what the Indian government does in terms of self-identification, self-affirmation. It's absolutely in violation of human dignity.
Yes, absolutely.
Could you just spell out maybe one or two specific concerns within the LGBTI community that they have against the bill?
One is the transgender bill basically criminalizes a bunch of transgender women staying together. I don't think they can enter into family arrangements with any other couple, but when it comes to transgender, any families, but when it comes to transgender women, when they live with like three other or four other transgender women, they criminalize that. They say the transgender women have to live with families, and if the families do not accept them, they have to live in care centers provided by the government, which are basically like dungeons, which I think is unfair. I think adults should be able to choose their own living arrangement. I hope that is being amended in the fresh bill that they're going to present in Parliament. The other thing that I have a concern with is when they criminalize begging, when they say transgender women cannot, you know, of course there's a lot of transgender begging, and I know it is a nuisance in a lot of cases, like on public trains and wherever else, but they have no other choice because people don't give them homes to live in, people don't give them homes on rent, they don't have any facilities to educate themselves and access jobs, and they're thrown out of home. So what do? They're prone to sexual violence, and they have to feed themselves. So they ask for, you know, charity. I really feel that has to change with opportunity and not by criminalizing begging. I think we have to give them opportunity to transform their lives.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going through the bill, and I found there was a specific section where it says, if you want a gender certificate, which is based on the gender you identify, you need to have had surgery and then like a medical certificate and someone else who also confirms that all those details are right. Do you think personally that there should be a law regarding that? Like, should it require for them to
have a very different... there might be technical reasons to why the bill is asking for that, but my view as being a member of the community is that when you are a transgender person in transition, it takes a long time for you to do your hormones, do your surgery when you're ready for it. But from day one that you pop that pill and you identify as a woman or a trans woman or a trans man, you need to be given the dignity of the gender you choose. I feel for them to say, you know, you go through that 5 years of hormones and go through that, you know, another 5 years of your surgery and then looking convincing enough and having all the anatomy, right? And that's when I will determine whether you're good enough or not. I feel that's not self-affirmation, right?
Yeah.
Look, so if there's a young boy who identifies as transgender and starts his hormones, it takes quite a while for them to get to the stage of surgery. But you can't wait till that time to kind of tell him that you're a trans woman. No, he feels that way from day one, and that's something which is such a powerful internal emotion which you cannot deny.
That's Apsara Reddy, the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress Party. And our special guest here tonight, Sayee, this transgender bill, it's called the Protection of Rights Bill. It doesn't sound like it's protecting too much. There seem to be a lot of concerns.
Well, this bill has quite a long history, if I can say. So it was actually passed by the lower house in 2018. And then before they could get it to the upper house was dissolved because of elections. And there were 27 amendments that were proposed. And then it was passed. Most of them were accepted, but there were a few key particular points that the trans community were not very happy with the 2018 bill. And the 2019 bill seems to have done no changes to that. And I think one of the interesting points was something as basic as choosing where they have to live. So
that seems really odd.
It says you can either live with people who are related by blood or your legal guardians. And if they
are
not...
Why is that? Why are transgender people singled out in that way?
We're not sure. It's... I believe they should be given the right to choose where they have to live, but I feel that since we are at the very beginning stages of even giving them their own identity, I think these laws are pretty conservative in almost, if I can say, letting them out into the free society.
But say there's been a tradition of transgender people, of third gender people living in communities, and it obviously, you know, India is a huge country and there are different cultures and things happen differently in different parts of the country, but there is this sort of tradition of living in transgender communities. Is that right?
I think it's primarily because parents with like conservative opinions, if they don't want their trans kid to be at home, other trans people from the community generally take the child on and then grow the child as part of the community. So you can see there are very separate communities of trans people.
So it's not a safety issue. You're not, if you're a trans person, are you more vulnerable if you are thrown out of home?
Yes, definitely. And I think because elder trans people have gone through some trauma when they have been like growing up, or if they have been abandoned by their parents, I think they take on the role of guardians for like other kids who are being like run out of home.
And that's been a long time story of the rainbow community around the world, hasn't it? We've got a lot more coming up from Apsara as we look more into what's happened in the past 12 months since the decriminalisation of homosexuality in India. You are on Worldwide Wave.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam, Apple, and Top from Apple Models in Thailand. The world first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
This week marks 1 year since the decriminalisation of homosexuality in India. But how much have things actually changed in the daily lives of India's LGBTI community? We asked our guest, Apsara Reddy, to give us an insight into how things have actually changed in the community since the change in law.
And given we have almost reached the one-year anniversary of our decriminalisation case, do you think that India is ready for progressive changes? Because the law alone simply can't determine what happens in the society.
Honestly, Sai, I really feel that Indian people are the most accepting people in the whole world. I've lived in London, I've lived in Australia, I've lived in the US. I feel Indian people do not... they might not... openly accept you and embrace everything that you want to be, but they're definitely not as violent as what I've seen in other communities around the world. So I really feel Indian people are ready for change, but how the change is, you know, presented to them is also very important. The message is twofold. I tell my transgender sisters also that, you know, you being transgender is fine, but don't have to shove it down people's throats. You don't have to, you know, be animated and gesture and, you know, rub your sexuality and gender on somebody's face. Mainstream yourself. Try and access spaces which everybody accesses. Try and, you know, maintain a code of conduct. So a lot of times, you know, for people to understand that, we also need to kind of toe the line sometimes.
What, in your opinion, still needs to change?
I think what needs to change is I think we need to have an open mind towards diversity. Be it the heterosexual community or the LGBT community, all of us need to kind of make space for diversity. Within our micro communities of LGBT, we have a lot of hate. because, you know, there's a lot of politics between the LGBT community itself. I think we need to be a lot more open-minded, and we need to accept diversity and the dimension diversity brings to our community and to our society. I think in celebrating diversity, we're celebrating human rights. And I think by denying somebody their basic right to be who they are, we're doing a great injustice to the human rights movement. So I feel LGBT communities, heterosexual communities, should actually make space for diversity and have a dialogue of understanding between each other.
In this 12-month period, we're coming up to this anniversary. Do you think that there's been change in public attitudes, or do you think that those progressive attitudes, which are there, as you say, were there all along? Do you think that the law has made much, the Supreme Court decision has made much of a difference?
I think public attitudes have changed because visibility has increased by leaps and bounds. A lot of transgender women and transgender men and gay men and lesbian women and all kinds of people coming out in mainstream media, giving quotes, giving television interviews. A lot of political parties have started including LGBT rights in their manifestos and their agendas. So visibility has grown by leaps and bounds. But I also think that just visibility alone wouldn't change much unless we have legal rights. And I think we need to have access to a lot more legal rights in terms of inheritance, in terms of marriage, in terms of, even in education forms to identify as transgender, as lesbian or gay or whatever. I think those need to change.
See, given that, even I'm from Chennai and my parents, despite being highly educated and my mom being a doctor, she knows what it means to be LGBTQI+, but she wouldn't necessarily want it for her own daughter. Do you understand what I mean?
I completely understand. I understand where she's coming from as well, Saya. And I understand. I understand your journey and your fight to be who you are. Mm. And I've gone through it with my parents. No matter how educated and exposed and well-meaning they are, I think for people have been mentally conditioned to think of this as something which is wrong, and it's an anomaly. It is something that can be cured, and that's the kind of image that's been fed to even the most educated and the most empowered. So it's something which we have to, we have to kind of constantly break that notion that, we're also extremely normal human beings, and there's nothing abnormal about us. There's nothing that we're doing that's going to be completely different against what other people are doing. Like, we just love differently, and I think loving differently shouldn't be a reason for us to be silenced, shouldn't be a reason for us to be attacked, shouldn't be a reason for us to be judged. I think loving differently is also beautiful. I think love can be of all kinds, and we should celebrate all shades of love.
Right.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Yes,
let me ask you a question. You speak to people from different parts of the world.
Mm.
You have conversations on LGBT issues with people from different continents and with different backgrounds. What according to you is the most beautiful thing about LGBT communities? You speak to people from different backgrounds and different continents and different countries. There's a common thread that all of us share. And what do you think that is?
I think there's nothing but love there.
Absolutely. I think there's limitless love. I think we base our identities on love, and we base our identities on courage. We base our identities on being honest about who we are. And I think that should be celebrated in the world. And I think that's what makes us beautiful. And I think that shouldn't be a reason for us to be discriminated.
It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to you, and we so much appreciate your time, and it's a thrill.
I must thank both of you for making it such a pleasure talking to you, and I think to all the to everybody in Melbourne listening, this is a city of joy for me, because this city, your city, Melbourne, is like second home to me. It shaped me, it made me who I am, it gave me perspective and courage. Thank you for your company tonight, and I hope your love and good wishes continue to travel with me.
Apsara Reddy there. I love, look, she hasn't lost her radio techniques. I love how she flipped it around. I'm going to ask you a question now, take over the interview.
Yeah.
What a wonderful person.
Yeah, yeah. And congratulations, Ai. I mean, it wouldn't have happened. we were talking about this a few times. The interview didn't just happen, though, did it? We had a few attempts, and with the, was it the Chennai traffic?
It was the Delhi traffic.
The Delhi traffic, yeah. Yes. And it was really difficult to get hold. Yeah.
Mm. That theme of visibility, we talked a lot about it last week when we were talking about Tunisia, and certainly when we've had our friends from Kaleidoscope on, again, they've talked about even where there's countries where there's laws in place but they're not being enforced, it's still something that is repressive. So taking away the Section 377 laws has allowed people, has given them permission to, just be themselves and be therefore more visible. And that visibility then sort of allows others to sort of, you know, it challenges them if they've got a problem. And
yeah, we had a story last week and in our wrap about how what the relationship was between, you know, anti-discrimination laws and public attitudes, and it was all about surveys, etc. But APSA said it's so much better. You know, actually,
she's a politician.
Yes,
I mean yes, and I have quite a few friends back home who belong to the LGBT community, and when I spoke to them last September after the decriminalization, the joy in their voice was amazing. And even within just a couple of days since the law was scrapped, so many people had come out to their parents. And what's more interesting was most of the parents were very accepting. So I think India, as a community, the acceptance is there. It's just that it's harder to find, if you can say.
It's going to stay there, you think? You think that's it's a firm change?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It is this kind of the second time they had sort of that period of, a couple of years, I think, where they it was decriminalised before it was recriminalised and they were going backwards and forwards. So it must have been an incredibly challenging time for LGBT people. Traumatising, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Parents, so even the educated ones, is it a different thing when it's your own child?
Yes.
You can be the most reasonable person in the world, the most worldly person, but when it's your child, it's different.
I hope you're not listening, Mum, but it is just one of those things where you're okay when it's your neighbor's kid, but you're not okay when it's your own.
Yeah.
And I think that just stems from, like, my elder generation's need for acceptance from the society. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like my mom has a daughter. It's like the entire society has a daughter, and mm-hmm. She is responsible for how the child is raised.
Yeah.
For no fault of the child.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the most, I don't know, I have the luckiest, most liberal parents. But even my mother, she was sad. And it was just, she said, because you won't have children. And I said, well, I could have children these days. But there's four of us, so, you know. But as it turned out, it's only my brother's the only one who's carried on the family name. But, yeah, I mean, she was just sad for that, you know, missing out on a part of my own. She was a bit sad that you're going to live a life of potentially sadness or lonely, you know, that was still back in the 80s and 90s, so, but no, she wouldn't say that anymore. But yeah, so I mean, it's you can have very, as you said, very accepting parents, very liberal parents, but it still can be when it's them within their child.
Other thing I liked that Apsara was talking about was in talking about diversity, it's about dialogue with the heterosexual community. So it's, you know, it's about talking, it's about understanding where different people are coming from. We do, as a community, sometimes go insular, don't we?
Mm. Yeah. There does seem that to be a discussion going on that, in some respects, I was sort of expecting, when we were going into this story, to hear a lot about division in India. I guess the different political parties, the two big parties, do they have quite similar positions? Is there some agreement around discrimination and how to deal with these type of issues, or is it very different?
Well, in my opinion, So the major parties that we have currently in India who are in the national level is the BJP, which is the current government that's in position. And we have the Indian National Congress, who APSARA is a part of. Traditionally, BJP has been right-wing, and the Congress is a little bit center-left, if I can say. And when this bill was passed in the Lok Sabha, one of the parties that were opposing it was the Congress, because they were listening to the fact that there are still problems and it's not worth passing it at this stage. But it still passed because, well, the majority government in the parliament is the BJP. So, though I'm not in a position to say whether a party is extremely right-wing in its policies, because this is still a transgender protection bill. So, but we'll just have to see where it goes.
Yeah, and maybe there'll be more amendments to come along. This is not the end.
We're talking all things India tonight. You're on Worldwide Wave.
This is Dede Utomo from Kaya Nusantara in Surabaya, Indonesia, speaking on Worldwide Wave.
Queered up by Indian lesbian singer-songwriter Pragya Pallavi. It's Worldwide Wave.
Worldwide Wrap. LGBT news from around the world. Scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities. From Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Now, thanks so much to Apsara Reddy, who's the first transgender politician in the Indian National Congress. Look at her Facebook page on facebook.com/talktoapsara.
And thank you to all our messages, Facebook from Rex, Nikolai, Selena, and many more, and who've shared with us on Facebook this week. That's W3Joy on Facebook, and of course to SMSs and emails that have come through. Thank you very much.
And thank you to the masterminds behind the scenes, our podcaster Alex and our social media master Dean. And always thank you to Andy, who's at the front desk.
And stick around, Bad Gaze with Helen and Alex is coming up for everybody who doesn't quite fit the stereotypes, followed by Triple Bypass and Soul Provider with another Matt. And a shout out to Stefan, one of our presenters who is listening in from abroad. Thanks, Stefan, for your message as well. Taking us out, a bit more Indian-inspired music. This is from the movie Moulin Rouge. It's Hindi, Sad Diamonds. We'll catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
She is mine!
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.